As evening sky darkens into night, lights come on in the skyscrapers of a waterfront cityscape. The lights merge to form the words Miramax Films. Silver letters fly up into a grey, cloudy sky, which brightens up as they form the words Heyday Films. A caption reads, "Childhood is measured out by sounds and smells and sights, before the dark hour of reason grows." John Betjeman. White titles on an undulating red background. Miramax Films presents, in association with BBC Films, a Heyday Films production. A film by Mark Herman. The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. Vera Farmiga, David Thewlis, Rupert Friend. Behind the titles, corners of the black and white swastika emblem on a red banner flutter into view. Three rectangular Nazi banners hang from the balcony of a grand white stuccoed public building. In front of it, a sprinkling of people wander across a rain-soaked square. Four young boys come careering through with their arms held out to the sides like the wings of fighter planes. People smile as the boys run between the tables of a crowded alfresco cafe. Inside a high-ceilinged house, crystal glasses are being polished. Two elderly men roll up a carpet together. Behind them, a maid sweeps the varnished wooden floor. Silverware is arranged on a tray. David Heyman, Asa Butterfield, Jack Scanlon, Amber Beattie, Sheila Hancock, Richard Johnson. The four boys dash down a street past a truck full of huddled people. Casting by Leo Davis and Pippa Hall. A chauffeur opens the door of an open-topped car, and an elegant young brunette gets out. She takes a gift box from him and hurries towards the large house, which has a gated entry and a portico of four white columns framing the front door. Music composed by James Horner. The elegant woman skips daintily up the stairs of the house. Director of photography, Benoit Delhomme, APC. The boys scamper along a busy street. One of them sticks his tongue out as he pretends to fly. They carry on past a building being guarded by two helmeted German soldiers. Back in the house, a maid dressed in grey standing in front of a long table, on which there are dozens of crystal glasses, is carefully wiping each one with a cloth. Based on The Boy in the Striped Pajamas by John Boyne. Produced by David Heyman. Written for the screen and directed by Mark Herman. The four boys, arms still outstretched, run past a truck and a soldier forcibly pushing a woman in a headscarf towards it. Other people carrying suitcases are also being herded onto the back. Beyond the truck, soldiers are leading families away from a tenement building past a barking Alsatian on the lead. In the elegant house, two maids lay a fresh cloth on a table and another polishes the floor with an electric polisher. In a bedroom, a young teenage blonde girl is sitting on the floor surrounded by her dolls. Outside the house, the lead boy slows down and the others carry on. The boy, Bruno, who has brown hair with a side parting and wears grey shorts, a rust-coloured woolen tank top and a white short-sleeved shirt, comes past a parked bicycle with a basket full of fresh breadsticks. He wanders into the well-kept garden full of mature bushes, runs up the stone entrance steps and goes in through the front door. Inside, Bruno watches the activity with a puzzled look. A table's carried past him by two men.
Hello, sweetheart.
Mum, what's going on?
We're celebrating.
Celebrating?
Mm, your father's been given a promotion.
That means a better job.
I know what promotion is.
So we're having a little party to celebrate.
He's still going to be a soldier, though, isn't he?
Yes, my love. Just a more important one now. There's some even more exciting news, but I think Dad wanted to tell you about that himself.
Bruno's mother leads her two children into the sitting room.
Moving? Where to?
To the countryside.
But that's miles away. What about Carl and Leon and Martin?
Sweetheart, I know it's hard, but we're all having to say goodbye to our friends for the time being.
Anyway, we'll make new ones where we're going, won't we?
Of course you are. You make lots of new friends.
Bruno looks down.
Bruno, you can have your friends round in the morning before we go.
Think of it as an adventure, like in one of your books.
But this is the best house ever.
Well, you never know. The house we're going to might be even better.
Dad says it's got a garden.
Mm-hmm. Look, The thing is, Bruno, the thing about being a soldier is that life is not so much about choice. It's more about duty. So if your country needs you to go somewhere, you go. Now, of course, going somewhere else is much easier when you know that your family are so delighted to go with you.
Bruno's dad, who has light brown hair and piercing eyes, nods encouragingly at his despondent-looking young son. It's evening and Bruno is standing at the top of the hall stairs, dressed smartly in a short-trousered suit and a dicky bow. Slowly he makes his way down with his sister Gretel. On the ground floor, the party is in full swing. Smartly dressed guests hobnob and chatter as drinks are served by the maids. At the bottom of the curved staircase, brother and sister look around nervously. Gretel spots an elderly couple standing with their mother and points them out to Bruno. As the children approach, the elderly lady, Grandma, sees them and beams.
Bruno, you're getting bigger every time I see you.
It's only been a week, Natalie.
Well, perhaps it's me that's getting smaller.
So, you two, what do you think of all this, Moving out of Berlin?
Well, Mummy and Daddy say it's a good thing, so I suppose it must be.
Grandma looks doubtful.
Children, be angels, will you?
Awesome food around.
The gathered guests stop talking as Bruno's father descends the staircase in his general's uniform. Military men amongst the guests direct Nazi salutes towards him. Bruno looks back at his sister, who's smiling proudly with their mother as their father solemnly comes down the stairs with his cap tucked under his arm. Near the bottom of the stairs, he stops and gives his guests the Nazi salute, the silver SS insignia on his collar catching the light. He joins the admiring throng, shaking hands with some and raising eyebrows at others as he passes through the crowd. His wife and father smile proudly. His mother looks on somberly.
Doesn't he look wonderful?
Absolutely. Oh, I'm so proud of you, my boy.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder if this is all down to me, making you those costumes for your little plays when you were tiny. You used to adore all that dressing up. Does it still make you feel special, Ralph dear? The uniform and what it stands for?
Mother, it's a party. Let's not spoil things.
Me? Spoil things?
You should be careful. Airing your views so publicly could land you in trouble, you know that.
How long are we losing you for, my boy?
Until the war is won, I would think.
Well, not so long, then.
You've got to smile. From the top of the landing, blue-eyed Bruno gazes down at the party as his mother and father dance among their guests. Wearing a white embroidered dress, Bruno's mother gazes lovingly into her husband's eyes. He dances stiffly and smiles awkwardly.
I'll write and say from day to day how much I love you.
As a chubby-cheeked singer croons, Grandma, who wears her grey blonde hair in a band of plaits across the top of her head, turns away from a conversation and looks up at Bruno. She gives him a discreet wave and a rueful smile.
So until we meet again, say cheerio and then give me a smile when you say goodbye.
The singer gives a cheery wave to the party. In daytime, Bruno plays soldiers with some friends on an upstairs landing. He runs along a carpeted corridor pretending to shoot with two pistols, then teeters as his friend mimes gunning him down. He drops to the floor. Bruno gets up and looks over the banister at his parents and Gretel waiting for him.
All right, Bruno. Time to say goodbye.
Bruno and his three chums come pounding down the stairs into the reception room, where the furniture's been covered in white dust sheets. As his friends make a beeline towards the front door, Bruno looks back at the interior of the house. His melancholy eyes gaze up at the church-like dimensions of the warm, panelled interior. Slowly he turns and goes out through the front door. Outside, his three friends wave him off as father drives the family away from the house. In the back seat of the open-top saloon car, Bruno spreads his arms out as his three friends chase the car pretending to be fighter planes. Finally, they stop and wave him goodbye. Bruno turns and sits down, resting his head against his mother's fox fur coat. She kisses the top of his head. In the green countryside, a steam train chugs out thick black smoke as it rolls towards a gentle bend in the track. Day turns into night, and inside the train, Gretel's praying.
Time has come for me to sleep. Lord, I thank thee for thy keep. Watch this night well over me, and teach me, Lord, to trust in thee. Care for children sick and poor. Grant them, Lord, thy blessing. And this I pray in Jesus' name. Care for my family just the same. Amen.
In their compartment, Mother smiles up at Gretel. Bruno, in striped pyjamas, is sleeping with his head on his father's lap. Father looks up from his reading for a moment at his blonde daughter sitting happily looking at her doll on the top bunk. He goes back to perusing his documents. A black car drives along a country road lined with tall poplar trees and carries on passing rolling green meadows on either side. The car, which has small swastika flags fixed to the front fenders, turns a bend. Father, who's at the wheel, puts on his general's cap. In the back seat, his wife wakes the children.
Children, look! Look! Our new home!
She and the children gaze open-mouthed as an austere grey stone house comes into view beyond a high perimeter cement wall and pillared gates. Mother's eyes dart about anxiously. The children are stony-faced. As the car drives into the bare gravel courtyard, soldiers shut the gates behind it. Above their heads, a stone eagle with outspread wings watches them from the top of one of the gateposts. The family get out of the car and look up at the house. Bruno looks at the tall, leaded windows and forbidding grey facade. Inside, he sits on the stairs. The interior is all white walls and dark wooden fittings. The entrance hall is bare. As SS officers pass through into another room, Father looks across at his wife, who's trying to hide her discomfort.
I have some business to take care of. I'll see you shortly.
He goes off into an adjoining office and sits down at an empty table in front of a stone fireplace. As his wife looks through, he nods for the door to be shut. A soldier obliges. Putting on a brave face, Mother turns to the children.
Well, what do we think? Come on, it's lovely. You two choose your rooms. I'll have Maria come and...
Gretel dashes upstairs.
Have you unpack?
Mother looks away as Bruno traipses up to the first floor. In a bare room, he sits on a table watching Maria the maid, a kindly-looking brunette, unpack his suitcase.
What do you think of it, Maria? The new house?
Well, it's not for me to say. But it won't feel like home until we make it feel like home, will it?
She beams at him. Outside the room, a young SS officer with even features and pale blue eyes looks in. Bruno watches him warily. The young soldier nods politely and walks on.
Who was that? One of your father's soldiers, I suppose. They look very serious. Well, they are, aren't they?
Bruno looks down, then back at Maria. Bruno grins and looks up at a slatted window above him. He gets up onto a table to try to look out. As Maria leaves the room, he peers through the wooden slats, his attention caught by something in the distance. Unblinking, he focuses his eyes on some outbuildings which lie at the far end of a field, partly obscured by the tall, dense trees in front of the house. In the kitchen, he and his sister help Maria and his mother stock the cupboards with cookware.
Play with who?
The children, over on the farm.
Farm? I didn't see a farm. And that one too?
You can only see it from my room.
And there are some children there?
Yes, quite a few.
Oh, that's good.
So, I'll be able to play with them?
I don't see why not.
I'll wait a little bit, just to see what they're like, because they look a bit strange.
The children do?
Well, and the farmers.
What sort of strange?
A man in threadbare clothes comes in with a wooden tray.
I'm sorry. Vegetables.
There.
The man, who has a shaved head, limps over to a counter.
Bruno, have you unpacked everything? Because I think you should go back upstairs and finish off.
Bruno watches the man carefully.
Thank you, Mum.
He notices the man's ill-fitting shoes and baggy striped trousers.
Bruno.
I told you they were strange.
Who?
The farmers. They wear pyjamas.
Mother looks away in concern, then hurries out of the kitchen. From her room, Gretel, playing with her many dolls, sees her mother peering through the slatted window in Bruno's bedroom. Downstairs.
Oh, Bruno, I was just coming to look for you. Well, thank you for that. That was extremely useful. I'll be over to see you later.
Of course.
Come in.
Bruno goes through into his father's dimly lit stark office.
Sit down, sit down. Well, what do you think? Oh, dear.
I want to go home.
You are home, Bruno. Home is where the family is. Isn't that right? Bruno, you have to at least give the place a chance. I promise you, it won't be long before you're...
Why do the farmers wear pyjamas? I can see them from my window.
Father, wearing his SS uniform with a death head insignia sewn onto the front of the tunic collar, looks away from Bruno, pursing his lips.
The thing is, Bruno, those people, well, you see, they're not really people at all.
Mother comes striding into the office.
Bruno, who told you it was a farm? Was it Maria?
No. It is a farm, isn't it?
Yes.
Mother looks tensely at Father.
Is it still with your new job?
All you need to know about my work here, Bruno, is that it's very important to our country and to you. We're working very hard to make this world a better place for you to grow up in.
But you're not a farmer. You're a soldier.
Bruno, can you come and help me finish sorting out in the kitchen?
I can still play with them, though. The children.
I don't think so, Bruno, no. Like you say, they're a bit strange, a bit, but they're different. Don't worry, my darling. We'll find you some new friends, but they won't be the ones from the farm. Ralph, you promised. You said it was miles away.
It is. How was I to know he could see it from the bedroom window?
There was one of them in our kitchen.
Father looks down irritably and draws a line across the piece of paper in front of him as Mother hurries out. From one of the pillars of the courtyard gates, the stone eagle looks out with its wings held high. In his bedroom, Bruno sits on his bed playing draughts on his own. He looks up at the slatted window, which now has two planks nailed across it. He goes round to the other side of the draft board and plays his invisible opponent's move, capturing a few pieces. Maria breezes in with a wicker laundry basket.
Master Bruno, how are you today?
Better. Aww.
You said the same thing every day for two whole weeks.
It's true.
Well, you should be out playing.
Playing with who?
I don't know. Gretel? Well, you can make your own fun.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Well, one thing's for sure. Sitting around being miserable won't make things any happier.
She flashes him a warm smile. As a soldier keeps guard with an Alsatian on a leash, Bruno runs in tight circles in the centre of the courtyard playing fighter planes on his own. He comes to an abrupt stop in his solo game as he notices something. He turns back to see if the guard is watching him and slowly edges towards a partly open wooden door set into the wall in the left-hand corner of the house. He pushes the door open and steps through. Treading carefully along a gravel alley, he finds himself in a courtyard at the back of the house. Beyond it, there's a garden. Mother, who's fussing with curtains in a window, sees him walk by.
Bruno, what are you doing?
Exploring!
No, no, not at the back. I told you, it's out of bounds. Explore at the front.
But I've explored it all.
We'll find something else to do.
Like what?
Come back here now and we'll think of something.
As Bruno makes his way back towards the front of the house, Mother tenses. Later, in a sitting room, he's lying on a sofa facing her as she knits. She tunes the radiogram and looks down at Bruno, who's sketching in a book. He's drawing farmers dressed in striped pyjamas. In the kitchen, the family are having breakfast. Bruno watches the balding man in striped clothing peeling potatoes.
So, children, what are you doing today?
Same as yesterday.
And what was that?
Same as the day before.
Except you went exploring.
I like exploring.
Where did you go?
I wanted to look in the back garden, but Mum wouldn't let me.
The back garden? Well, God forbid. I expect you'll be missing those friends of yours.
I even miss school.
Well, I never thought I'd hear you say that. Anyway, you won't be missing it for long.
Really?
I've arranged a tutor for you both. A Herr List will be visiting twice a week.
So, we're not going to school? School's coming here?
Mm-hmm. On an old bicycle, I gather.
Hmm. Bruno glances away and munches on his toast. Under a large tree in the front of the house, Bruno gazes up from the dappled shadows, looking bored and unhappy. He stares up at the giant limbs of the tree stretching outwards towards a perfect blue sky. He sits up and watches Gretel looking through the pages of some magazines with the young soldier with pale blue eyes. The soldier, Lieutenant Kotler, grins and steps away. Wearing an undershirt with braces over the top, he dips a cloth into a bucket and soaps down the bonnet of Father's car. Bruno walks over to them. As he comes up, Kotler stops soaping the car and turns to him. Gretel sighs, disappointed.
Good morning, little man.
He pats Bruno's head.
How are you this morning?
Can I ask you a favour?
Well, you can ask.
Are there any spare tyres around? An old one from one of the trucks or something?
Well, the only spare tyre I've seen around here belongs to Lieutenant Meinberg.
He looks over at a porky soldier chatting to a guard by the front gates.
Well, is he using it?
Yes, he's very attached to it.
Stop it. He doesn't understand. He's only 8.
You're only 12. So stop pretending you're any older.
Gretel takes her hand from Kotler's arm.
What do you want a tyre for, anyway?
I want to make a swing.
A swing? That does sound exciting.
Kotler shouts over to the man in the striped threadbare clothing who's tending some plants.
You! Here, now! Move!
Take this boy to the outhouse in the back garden. There are some tyres in there. He will select one, you will carry it wherever he asks. Do you understand?
The tired-looking man nods quickly and hurries away.
Well, little man, what are you waiting for?
Bruno follows the shaven-headed man, Pavel, through the door that leads to the side of the house and out towards the back garden. Bruno peeks at the window through which he was last spotted by his mother, but the curtains are drawn. Pavel, in his ill-fitting shoes, shuffles down a dirt path running along a vegetable garden and leads Bruno to a shed. At the far end of the shed, Pavel, bending stiffly, looks through a basket and under a blanket. Bruno notices a small window high up in the far wall. As he gazes thoughtfully up at it, Pavel rolls an old tyre towards him.
How about this one?
Bruno nods and Pavel carries the tyre out of the shed. Bruno casts his eyes back to the small window in the far wall. On his new tyre swing, he swings under the large branches of the tree in the front courtyard. Looking up dreamily, he sees a wisp of black smoke floating out from behind the garden trees. Trying to get a better look, he stands up on the swing, but he slips and tumbles onto the gravel below. Lying on the ground, he slowly opens his eyes and sees Pavel running towards him, his Hessian apron flapping around his legs. In the kitchen, Pavel carefully dresses Bruno's grazed knee, wrapping it up in a bandage. Sitting on the table, Bruno studies the man's pale, lined face.
Where's my mum?
She's out.
When is she back?
Soon, I expect. But don't worry.
But I might bleed to death.
No, you won't.
Pavel takes some scissors and snips at the roll of bandage.
Will I need to go to hospital?
No. It's only a small cut. Oh, come on, it's not that bad. There. All
He closes the metal first aid box and hobbles over to a kitchen cabinet. Opening the fitted powder blue cabinet, he puts the box back inside, Bruno watching him intently.
What's your name?
Pavel. Now, you've got to sit still for a few minutes before you start walking around in that again.
Will you tell my mum what happened?
I think she's going to see it for herself.
She'll probably take me to a doctor.
I don't think so.
It could be worse than it looks.
It isn't.
How would you know? You're not a doctor.
Pavel sits peeling potatoes over a tin bucket.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not. You peel potatoes.
I practiced as a doctor before I came here.
You couldn't have been much good then if you had to practice.
Bruno flashes a cheeky smile. Pavel smiles back at him, his eyes watering.
Now, what are you going to be when you grow up? I know. An explorer.
How do you know that?
Pavel carries on peeling.
Is it nice on the farm?
Bruno's mother comes in, her eyes widening as she sees her son sitting with Pavel. Pavel sits up stiffly.
Bruno, what happened to you?
I made a swing, but I fell off it and cut my knee. But Pavel here carried me in and put a bandage on it.
Mother glances at Pavel for a moment, then turns back to Bruno and lifts him up off the kitchen table.
Go to your room.
But Pavel says I...
Don't argue. Go to your room.
Bruno leaves the kitchen. Mother stands with her face turned away from Pavel, his head bent over the bucket as he continues peeling. There's tension in her eyes as she picks flowers up from the table and glances back in his direction. She looks down at the floor, then half turns towards Pavel, words hovering on her lips.
Thank you.
Pavel stops peeling for a moment, though neither looks directly at each other. Mother takes her things and hurries out of the kitchen with two bunches of flowers. Pavel turns his head slightly and watches her go. In Gretel's bedroom, Bruno stands on a chair looking out of her window. Gretel lies on her bed reading.
It's not fair, you having this view.
Well, I'm not swapping.
Bruno sees an old man arriving at the house on a bicycle.
I think school's here.
At a table.
I mean more recent history. Are you interested in current affairs?
Yes, very.
So, you will be aware of the situation in which our great nation presently finds itself.
Yes. I read newspapers whenever I can, and one of Father's men keeps me up to date on everything that's happening.
Good. And you, Bruno, have you been reading newspapers? Have you been reading anything?
Books.
Good. What sort of books?
Adventure books, mainly. You know, knights in shining armor, exploring strange lands and stuff. And silly princess is always getting in the way.
Ah, well, this is why I'm here to help. You're how old now, Bruno? 8? Time to get your head out of those fiction books. Start learning about fact. Time, I think, to turn your mind to the real world, and I believe this would be the perfect start.
The bespectacled tutor shows him a hardback book, Deutscher Almanach. As two trucks pass by on the road beyond the wall, Bruno, sitting on his swing, has the almanac that his tutor, Herr List, gave him, opened on his lap. He closes the big book and looks across at the door by the side of the house and sees that it's open. He blinks rapidly and chews his lips as he contemplates the half-open door leading to the back of the house and garden. Moments later, he's creeping down the side alley, glancing warily behind him. He breaks into a sprint and tears down the path to the shed. Inside, he opens the small window high up on the back wall. He climbs out through the window. On the other side, he hops down onto a stacked pile of logs. He jumps down from the logs and runs on into a sun-sprinkled glade. He looks up at the branches of trees overhead and the sun's rays shining down, and skips through into a thick area of woodland. He swings his arms happily as he runs further into the wood, past thick undergrowth that's almost as tall as he is. He skitters down a steep bank at the base of a gnarled old tree and runs nimbly over a log, crossing over a small patch of green water. As he scurries along, he whips the air with a long, thin stick in his hand. In his grey shorts, white shirt and rusty-coloured tank top, he makes his way down another bank, hitting the scrubland on either side of him with the stick. He crosses a narrow, fast-flowing stream, then stops and furrows his brow, noticing something ahead. Above the bank, he sees barbed wire fencing stretching between concrete posts. He climbs the bank and sees that the fence runs all the way round a large rectangular plot of land. At the far end is a cluster of wooden huts. A wheelbarrow stands by some concrete posts just inside the fence, and slumped near it is a boy of about Bruno's age. He has a shaved head and wears a tatty striped uniform with a number patch on the front. Bruno creeps forward with his stick. The boy flinches as Bruno walks towards him. Bruno speaks.
Hello.
The boy looks behind him cautiously, then turns back towards Bruno.
I'm exploring.
The shaven-headed boy looks forlornly down at the ground.
What are you doing?
We're building a new hut.
Bruno looks across at the camp and sees cropped-haired inmates erecting the frame of a hut.
Have you got lots of friends over there?
A few, but we fight a lot. That's why I like being out here. I can be on my own.
I'm Bruno.
Shmuel.
Sorry?
I'm Shmuel.
That's your name. Never heard of anyone called that before.
I've never heard of anyone called Bruno.
But Shmuel. No one's called Shmuel.
Shmuel looks down glumly. Bruno points behind him.
I live in the house. Back there.
Shmuel looks up, blinking.
Have you got any food on you?
No. Are you hungry?
Shmuel nods quickly. Bruno looks at him intently.
How old are you?
8.
Me too.
Bruno looks around with an impatient shrug as Shmuel keeps his eyes fixed on his lap.
It's not fair. Me being stuck over here on my own, while you're over there, playing with friends all day.
Playing?
Well, that number. Isn't it part of a game or something?
It's just my number. Everyone gets given a different number.
Oh, right. Then what happens?
I have to go back now.
Really? It was nice to meet you, Shmuel.
And you, Bruno.
Shmuel wheels his barrow back towards the huts where the other inmates are gathering. Bruno watches curiously as he trundles off, pushing the heavy barrow. As the boy glances back at him, Bruno's face brightens. In his bedroom, he searches one of his cupboards, then hurries off to his mother and Maria in the kitchen.
Mum, I can't find my football.
It'll be in one of your cupboards, sweet.
It isn't. I've looked. Can I have a piece of chocolate?
A piece, yes.
As his mother looks away, hearing a noise, he stuffs the whole bar into his shorts pocket.
Bruno, have you looked in the cellar?
The cellar?
For your football.
Oh.
He slinks off. Mother turns and fixes her clear blue-eyed gaze on the garden where Pavel is working. He stops for a moment and staggers on his feet, looking completely exhausted. Bruno comes down the dark cellar stairs, holding a torch out in front of him. The beam of light picks out piles of bric-a-brac and items of unused furniture. He makes his way over to a corner where there's a basket, an upended garden table and a mirror. He goes to pick something up and his torch drops to the ground and goes out. Switching it back on, he comes across hundreds of undressed children's dolls piled up several feet high. He frowns, his eyes full of fear and incomprehension. He runs out of the cellar with a football and goes upstairs. Near the top, he drops the ball and it comes bouncing back down. In her bedroom, Gretel's pinning up a Nazi youth poster.
Gretel, I've just seen all your...
All my what?
All your dolls. Down in the cellar.
Dolls?
Are for little girls. It's not right to be playing with silly toys while people are away risking their lives for the fatherland.
Gretel goes back to pinning up a picture of Adolf Hitler. Bruno turns and goes. By the camp's perimeter fence where he met Schmuel, Bruno sits cross-legged watching the huts and the empty grounds. He looks down at the stolen chocolate bar and starts to unwrap it. He breaks off a piece and munches it. As he chews, he tosses a small rock up and down in his hand, then throws it away. He tosses a piece of jagged metal at the fence and it sparks. At home, the tutor sits between Bruno and Gretel.
My pupil's density is my density.
Destiny.
Its struggles and its sorrows, its joys and its miseries are mine. I must work and create for the resurrection of my fatherland. The history of my people is great and glorious, and it's 12 o'clock.
I'm sorry.
Isn't that when you finish?
The termination of the lesson is for the tutor to decide, Bruno, not the pupil. Now, will you please continue?
Bruno looks back into his book and half smiles to himself. In the courtyard, on his swing, he watches Lieutenant Kotler sitting in the driver's seat of the family car. His mother comes out of the house. She walks round the car and sees Bruno on his swing.
Oh, Bruno, there you are. I'm just going into town for an hour. Do you want to come?
He shakes his head.
You be careful on that thing. Thank you.
Bruno waves as the car drives out of the gates. As soon as the car's gone, he dashes away. He and Schmuel talk to each other through the camp fence.
Can I ask you something? Why do you people wear pyjamas all day?
They're not pyjamas.
Well, those.
We have to. They took all of the clothes away.
Who did?
The soldiers.
The soldiers? Why?
Schmuel shrugs.
I don't like soldiers. Do you?
I do, quite. My dad's a soldier. But not the sort that takes people's clothes away for no reason.
What sort, then?
Well, he's the important sort. He's in charge of making everything better for everyone. So is your dad a farmer?
No, he's a watchmaker. Or was. Most of the time now, he just mends boots.
It's funny how grown-ups can't make their minds up about what they want to do. It's like Pavel. Do you know him? He lives over there. He used to be a doctor. Gave it all up to peel potatoes.
Mother returns in the car. From the backseat window, she sees that Bruno's swing is empty. Back by the camp, Bruno looks up at two tall chimneys on a hill.
Can I ask you another question? What do you burn on those chimneys? I saw them going the other day. Is it just lots of hay and stuff?
I don't know. We're not allowed over there. Mama says it's old clothes.
Well, whatever it is, smells horrid.
Schmuel grins.
I wish you'd remembered the chocolate.
Yes, I'm sorry. I know. Perhaps you can come and have supper with us sometime.
I can't, can I? Because of this.
But that's to stop the animals getting out, isn't it?
Animals? No, it's to stop people getting out.
Are you not allowed out? Why? What have you done?
I'm a Jew.
Bruno stares blankly at Schmuel, who has sores around his lower lip and several teeth missing. Bruno shifts uncomfortably and hauls himself to his feet.
I think I should go now.
As he starts to go, he nods to Schmuel.
Will you be here tomorrow?
I'll try. Goodbye, then. Bye.
Mother comes into Gretel's bedroom with two bags of sweets.
Little present, sweetheart.
Gretel, wearing Hitler Youth uniform, takes them from her with a smile.
Thank you, Mum.
Mother hovers in the doorway with a look of concern as her gaze drifts over the walls full of Nazi images.
Have you seen Bruno?
Outside on the swing, I think.
Mother leaves Gretel on the bed, cutting out another picture of Nazi soldiers from a magazine. She runs down the stairs and smiles, seeing Bruno back on his swing. It's evening. Father is on the phone in the lounge.
Yes, Thursday's perfect. I'll have a car come to collect you both.
Are Grandma and Grandpa coming?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, did you smell that horrible smell the other day? Coming from the chimneys?
What sort of ill?
Mother listens to Father's phone call.
The day I fell off the swing. Did you smell it, Mum?
Father!
Mum!
Let me speak to her. Yes, she is. I can hear her. Yes, we look forward to it. Goodbye.
Father hangs up and sits down in an armchair.
Is Grandma not coming?
No. She's poorly, apparently. But Grandpa's coming.
Did you smell it, Dad?
What?
That horrid smell from the chimneys. What is it?
Father shakes his head.
I think they just burn rubbish there sometimes. Look.
What?
Father points out a move on the drafts board.
Hey!
Gretel.
Hey, that's not fair!
Gretel.
What?
It's only a game.
Mother brings a tray of empty glasses into the kitchen where Father is having a drink.
Ralph, this tutor you've brought in, does he usually teach children as young as Gretel and Bruno?
I believe so. Why?
Well, do we know what he's teaching them? Gretel seems to have become so...
They're being taught what all children are being taught at the moment. They mustn't get left behind. Come on.
He kisses her smooth cheek.
Let's get to bed.
She smiles faintly and follows her husband out of the kitchen, turning off the light. At lesson time, Gretel reads to the white-haired, round-spectacled tutor, Herr List.
The Jew slandered us and incited our enemies. The Jew corrupted us through bad books. He mocked our literature and our music. Everywhere, his influence was destructive, the eventual result of which was our nation's collapse. And then...
Yes, Bruno?
I don't understand. The nation's collapse was all down to this one man.
The Jew here means the entire Jewish race. If it had been just one man, I'm sure something would have been done about him.
There is such thing as a nice Jew, though, isn't there?
I think, Bruno, if you ever found a nice Jew, you would be the best explorer in the world.
Bruno becomes lost in thought.
Continue, Gretel.
The aim of the Jew is to become the ruler of humanity. The Jew is not creative, but destructive. He is the enemy of culture. Thousands of Germans have been made poor by the Jew.
In the family larder, Bruno takes a small square of cake from a few dozen resting on a baking tray and puts it into his satchel. He stops for a moment, hearing the rumble of a low-flying aircraft overhead, then takes another. Maria comes in.
Master Bruno, what are you doing? You've just had your lunch, haven't you?
I was going for a walk, and I thought I might get peckish.
But don't make a mess of your satchel. Bring it here. I'll wrap it properly for you.
No, it's none of your business.
Bruno, what is it? What are you doing with your satchel?
Hairless gave us some books. I'm going out on the swing to read.
Let me see.
What?
Books.
No.
Bruno, I just want to see what books Hairless has given you.
Bruno hides the satchel.
I told a lie.
What?
I've just got...
His mother stands over him.
Adventure books.
Maria looks up and Bruno holds his mother's gaze. She smiles and holds her hand up as if to strangle him, then kisses his cheek.
Go on, off you go then.
Bruno patters towards the front door.
Now, Maria, there's two extra for supper tonight. The Commandant's father will be here and I believe Lieutenant Kotler's joining us.
Bruno darts back in and picks up his football. By the camp perimeter fence, he bounces his football up and down. On the other side of the wire, Schmuel scoffs down the piece of cake. Bruno stops to watch him cramming his face until his cheeks bulge out on either side. Schmuel picks the last of the crumbs up from his stripy shirt.
Here!
Bruno throws the ball over the fence towards Schmuel. Schmuel picks up the ball but won't throw it back. He passes it through the fence.
What's the matter?
Don't throw it back.
What? Why not?
It's dangerous.
Dangerous?
It's just a ball. Come on.
Do you not like playing?
Schmuel nods.
Just not ball games.
Not here.
Schmuel looks down somberly.
Tell me how the number game works.
I told you it's not a game. We just all have numbers.
Schmuel runs to grab his wheelbarrow.
Schmuel!
Looking like a little old man, Schmuel hurries towards the huts without glancing back. Bruno watches him go and bites his lip. Arriving home with shopping, Mother sees him returning through the door at the side of the house.
Bruno, what are you doing?
My ball went over. I was just getting it back.
Bruno bounces the ball into the house. Mother sniffs the air and exhales in disgust, looking round for the source of the smell. Cotler walks past her.
They smell even worse when they burn, don't they?
What?
In her stripy short-sleeved blouse and green hat, Mother shoots a questioning look at Cotler, then turns her face towards the sky, where thick black smoke is spewing across the tops of the trees beyond the back garden. She looks back at blonde-haired Cotler, whose smooth expression suddenly falters.
Surely, yeah.
Mother's mouth turns downwards and her face locks into a horrified grimace. Cotler turns away sharply and strides off. Later, Mother stands rigidly in front of her husband, who sits smoking behind his desk, his tunic unbuttoned.
Elsa, I was sworn to secrecy.
From your own wife?
Yes.
She paces the office.
I took an oath upon my life, do you understand? Elsa, you believe in this too. You want this country to be strong.
No, Ralph, no! No, not that! How can you...
Because I'm a soldier. Soldiers fight wars.
That isn't war!
It's a part of it. It's a vital part of it. The fatherland we all desire, all of us, you included, cannot be achieved without work such as this. Elsa. Elsa.
Get away from me!
Bruno peers in.
Get away from me!
Grandpa's here. Grandpa's here.
We'll be through in a moment.
Father scowls and exhales as he contemplates his weeping wife.
Who told you about this?
Mother shakes her head. Slowly, she tilts her head towards him. At dinner, Cotler glances over to the general at the end of the table. The general shoots him a surly look back. Her eyes downcast, her face devoid of makeup, Mother chews a morsel of her food, avoiding eye contact with anyone. At the end of the room, Pavel in serving clothes and a maid stand to attention. Bruno, dressed in grey blazer and tie, looks around the room curiously. Gretel, next to him, wears a cream blouse with a dark neckerchief.
How's Grandma?
She's a bit out of the weather, I'm afraid. It's a shame. She was so much looking forward to seeing you.
Perhaps next time, if she feels up to it.
Oh, absolutely.
Grandpa has a grey moustache and hooded eyes and wears a stiff round collar and black tie.
You know, Ralph, your mother really is sick. She's been talking about this visit for weeks.
Maybe that's what's made her sick.
Mother looks accusingly across at her husband, who swigs from a glass of red wine, his eyes shifting.
So, your father tells me that you've got a tutor.
Yes, he's nice.
But he won't let us read any adventure books. All we do is boring old history.
Let me tell you something, young man. If it wasn't for history, we wouldn't all be sitting around this table. The work your father is doing here. History in the making.
Grandpa pumps his fists. Mother shoots another look at her husband, who continues chewing his food, po-faced. Lieutenant Kotler leans across to Bruno.
When I was your age, history was my favourite subject by miles, which obviously didn't please my father.
Well, why not?
Well, he was a professor of literature at the university.
Hey. Does he still teach?
I don't really know.
You don't know?
We're not in touch, my father and I. He left the country some time ago.
Really, when?
About 4 years ago, Herr Commandant.
But surely he can't be very old. What is he, still in his 40s, late 40s? Where did he go?
Kotler looks away from his commanding officer, taking a mouthful of food.
Lieutenant Kotler. Your father, the professor of literature, where did he go?
I believe it was Switzerland, Herr Commandant.
Strange that he should choose to leave the fatherland at the very moment it needed him most, just when we're all required to play our part in the national revival. More wine.
What reason did he give? Was he tubercular?
Herr Commandant?
Did he go there to take the air?
I'm afraid I really don't know, Herr Commandant. You'd have to ask him.
Well, that would be rather difficult, wouldn't it?
With him being in Switzerland. Come on! What's the matter with you tonight?
Pavel, wearing a white apron over his serving clothes, approaches the table with a bottle of red wine. He pours some into the general's glass with trembling hands.
Yes, perhaps that was it. Perhaps he was ill. Unless, of course, he had disagreements. I mean, with government policy.
And here's such men. Disturbed, most of them. Or just plain cowards.
Even so, all of them traitors?
Absolutely right.
Presumably, if that was the case with your father, you will have informed your superiors, as is your duty. Lieutenant Kotler.
Pavel knocks over Kotler's glass.
You fighting Jew!
And is dragged away into the hall. Mother looks pleadingly at her husband, who doesn't look up from his plate. Bruno gapes in horror as his father continues to munch his food.
But Dad just sat there.
What did you expect him to do? The Jew deserved it.
Bruno's sitting by Gretel's bed, blinking back tears. She reads a military magazine. He turns to look at her.
Can I ask you something? About the farm?
Oh, Bruno, you don't still think it's a farm, do you?
Bruno wipes a tear from his cheek. Gretel puts down the magazine and slips out of bed to sit next to him. Tenderly, she puts an arm around his shoulder.
It's a camp. What's called a work camp. For Jews, obviously.
Just Jews. Because they're the best workers.
They're not in there because they're good, silly. They're no good at anything. They're in there because they're evil. They're the enemy.
The enemy? But I think we're fighting...
They're evil, Bruno. Evil, dangerous vermin. They're the reason we lost the Great War. Haven't you been listening to anything Herr List has been telling us?
No, not really. Dad's not horrible, is he? He's a good man.
Of course he is.
But he's in charge of a horrible place.
It's only horrible for them, Bruno. We should be prouder of Dad now more than ever before. He's making the country great again.
She cuddles her young brother. It's morning, and Maria is scrubbing the floor of one room with a stiff, soapy brush. In the breakfast room beyond, the family are seated around a table. Mother's eyes are red from crying, and her cheeks glisten with tears. She looks weak and tired. Bruno watches her anxiously. At the opposite end of the table, Father passes the butter along. Bruno watches him scoff down a bit of bread, cracking a brief smile at his son as he chews. The smile disappears, and his face resumes its expression of cold indifference. Later, Bruno sits reading on the floor in front of a sofa. He looks up at the football, which is on the floor a few feet in front of him. As he gazes at it, he remembers Shmuel passing it back to him through the camp fence.
Like you say, they're a bit strange, a bit, but they're different.
They're the enemy, Bruno. Evil, dangerous vermin.
Well, you see, they're not really people at all.
Now, Bruno's sitting at the bottom of the staircase watching junior soldiers bring in a film projector and a metal stand. Bruno does up a shoelace and goes off down a corridor. As he walks past the open dining room door, he stops and does a double take. Shmuel is standing behind the dining table lined with glassware with a cloth.
What are you doing here?
They wanted some tiny fingers to clean all these.
Bruno glances at the dozens of glasses on the table. Shmuel cleans one of them and looks at his friend unsurely. His skin is white and he has dark circles beneath his eyes. Bruno goes on.
We're not supposed to be friends, Yoni. We're meant to be enemies. Did you know that?
Shmuel concentrates on cleaning the glass. Bruno glances down at a silver tray of biscuits.
Do you want some?
Shmuel nods matter-of-factly. Bruno grabs two handfuls and gives them to him. He laughs as Shmuel scoffs them.
What's your dad like?
I've no.
Is he a good man?
Shmuel nods.
You've never thought he wasn't?
Shmuel shakes his head, his mouth full.
And you're proud of him?
Aren't you proud of yours?
Shmuel takes a bite of cake.
Is it really horrible in the camp?
How dare you talk to people in the house? How dare you?
Kotler.
Are you eating?
Have you been stealing food? Answer me!
No, sir. He gave it to me. He's my friend.
What? Little man? Do you know this Jew?
Do you know this Jew?
No. I just walked in and he was helping himself. I've never seen him before in my life.
Kotler nods. Shmuel lowers his eyes. Kotler puts his hand on Bruno's shoulder.
You, finish cleaning the glasses. When I come back, we'll have a little chat about what happens to rats who steal. Come away.
Kotler turns away from the small Jewish boy and leads Bruno out of the room by his shoulder. Little Shmuel watches them go, dwarfed by the table in front of him. In his room, Bruno kicks out at a textbook lying on the floor. He sits on a divan, hunches over and tugs at his hair. He stares ahead, sobbing, and wipes tears from his face. Then he gets up and hurries out of the room. He dashes down the stairs. At the bottom, he peers across into the dining room where he can see two hands cleaning a glass with a white cloth. He smiles to himself and runs in to inspect. His face falls when he sees that it's Maria. She looks up from her work and blanks him when she sees him, returning her gaze back to the glass that she's cleaning. Bruno crosses the stream by the camp and from the bank looks towards the concrete posts where Shmuel usually sits. No one's there. Bruno turns and starts wandering back. He sits on his tire swing looking forlorn. His attention is suddenly caught by vehicles streaming into the courtyard. A black staff car followed by two open-topped vehicles and a motorbike with a mounted machine gun in the sidecar. On the front steps, Father and Lieutenant Kotler welcome the men. They click their heels and give the Nazi salute. The officers watch a film.
New arrivals here are happy to discover that life in the camp is not all work, and that there's ample opportunity for leisure also. At the end of their day in the ironmongery, wooden mill or boot factory, the workers can enjoy the many forms of pastime that the camp has to offer. Organized sport is very popular. Those that don't play certainly enjoy watching.
Bruno spies through a window.
At the end of the working day, the centrally located cafe is the ideal place for friends and families to join together for a hearty and nutritious meal. The children in particular enjoy the pastries and cakes on offer.
In the film, the camp detainees look happy and full of life.
In the evenings, the occasional music concerts, either by visiting orchestras or indeed by talented musicians from within the camp itself, are always well attended. Other recreations include reading in the library, pottery, cookery, art, and horticulture. For adult and child alike, almost any activity one could wish for is available within the camp.
As the film ends, Bruno runs off. As Kotler leads the way out of the projection room, Bruno sits by the wall watching his father and the visitors emerge.
Bravo. Excellent.
Bruno smiles as he watches the visitors pat his father on the back. Bruno runs over to his dad and wraps his arms around his waist in a loving hug. Father looks up at his wife, who watches grimly from the first floor landing. She turns away. Kotler strides off, and Father watches him go with a look of distaste. Bruno rests his head against his dad's waist. Racing downstairs carrying two tennis rackets, Bruno freezes as he sees Kotler stepping through a doorway. In full Nazi uniform and a long leather overcoat, Kotler steps up to Bruno and raises his hand. Bruno flinches. Kotler pauses, then ruffles the boy's hair.
Goodbye, little man.
Blonde, lean-faced Kotler turns and walks out. Holding a racket in each hand, Bruno runs through the woodland with his arms outstretched like a plane. He sits on the grass outside the camp fence, absent-mindedly tapping the rackets against each other. There is no sign of Shmuel. Now holding a toy aeroplane, Bruno runs along a path by the woodland pond. He stands waiting outside the camp fence, but again, Shmuel isn't there. Bruno trudges through the woods with his head bowed. He breaks into a run as he approaches the camp fence.
Shmuel! Shmuel!
He runs up and looks down at his friend, who sits on the ground with his shoulders hunched and his head bowed. Shaven-headed Shmuel slowly looks up. His right eye is bruised and swollen, with a bloody graze on the side of his brow. He looks down again.
I don't understand. I saw a film about the camp. And they looked so nice.
Bruno sits down, facing Shmuel through the barbed wire.
I don't know why I did it. Gretel and everyone are saying all these things. And that soldier's so scary.
Shmuel doesn't look up.
I've been coming here for days, but you were never here. I thought maybe you weren't friends anymore. Shmuel, I'm really sorry for what I did. We are still friends, aren't we?
Shmuel looks up at Bruno. He gives a tight-lipped smile and nods his head. He reaches his hand through the wire. Bruno takes it and they shake. The family are sitting at the breakfast table. Bruno looks across at his mother, who's in her dressing gown, her hair loose and uncombed. She stares into space and fiddles with a teaspoon.
Where's Kurt these days?
I haven't seen him for ages.
Who's Kurt?
Lieutenant Kotler.
He's been moved to the front. It was felt that his youth and enthusiasm would be put to better use there.
Herr Commandant, telephone.
In actual fact, Gretel, he was sent there because he failed to inform the authorities of his father's lack of loyalty to the party.
Which was his duty, I might add.
Which was his bad luck.
Bad luck.
Well, bad luck that it was his father who was disloyal and not his mother. As one presumably doesn't have to report one's mother.
Father glares at mother. Bruno notices another inmate peeling potatoes in the kitchen.
When will Pavel be back?
Mother ignores him.
Mum.
Never stupid.
The general holds the telephone receiver against his shoulder.
His father, they've been bombed.
They all look at him in shock.
Grandmother's dead.
Bruno turns away. A hearse, festooned with flowers and pulled by a single black horse, slowly follows a priest along a tree-lined avenue. Walking behind the hearse, a father wearing full SS uniform and grandpa who wears a solemn black suit. Behind them, a large group of mourners, led by mother, Bruno and Gretel. The priest officiates at the graveside. A high-ranking SS officer lays a bunch of flowers on the coffin and gives father a solemn nod. Mother reads the card on the flowers. Inside is printed the Nazi emblem of a spread eagle on a swastika and the words Von dem Führer. It has been signed by Hitler.
He can't have that on there. She wouldn't have wanted it.
He does.
Mother, dressed in black with a jet black fox fur over her shoulder, looks disbelievingly at her husband, who eyes her stonily. She turns away, her lip quivering. With another glance at him, she reaches towards the flowers. He grabs her hand and forcibly pulls it back. Mother struggles to fight back her tears. Bruno talks to Schmiel through the work camp fence.
Have you ever been to a funeral?
He shakes his head.
My grandma and grandpa both died just after we got here, but there weren't any funerals.
He points at a drafts board.
That one there to there.
Bruno moves the piece for him.
They both died at the same time? What of?
I don't know. Papa said they must have caught something on the way here. They had to go to a hospital as soon as we arrived. We didn't see them again.
This is fun.
We should do something a bit more exciting, though.
Schmuel points at the board, which is set out in front of Bruno.
That one there, two there.
This one. This one.
No, that one.
This one, to here.
No, there.
To here.
No.
Here.
No.
Bruised, pasty-faced Schmuel grins at Bruno.
I don't want you to go away again.
No. Neither do I.
Bruno looks through the wire at his friend and cracks a smile. Bruno peers through the lattice window in the wooden door that leads to the back garden. He watches his mother leaning back on his swing, gazing up at the treetop as she spins round and round. Bruno carefully sneaks through the door and creeps across the yard. Father peers balefully through the blinds of his office window at his wife, spinning on the tire swing. It's night and Gretel's sitting up in bed with her hands clamped over her ears. Bruno, wearing striped pyjamas, comes into the room. Gretel shuffles over and lets him get into bed beside her.
Well, what does it say about my ability to carry out my work if I cannot control my own strength?
They snuggle against each other. The next day, Father, sat behind his desk, is fidgeting with his fingernails. Gretel and Bruno face him on the other side of the desk.
Are you happy here?
Yes, very.
And you, Gretel?
Well, I was, but I do miss home. I miss my friends.
Yes, I'm sure. And you too, Bruno. You must miss those friends of yours.
No, not anymore, really.
Gretel frowns at him and he glances at her blithely. Father, his grey tunic unbuttoned, gets up, takes a cigarette from a silver case and lights it.
I suppose the real question is, if the opportunity arose, would you prefer to live somewhere else?
Back home?
No, not Berlin, not yet. Somewhere safe, say,
Aunt Lottie's in Heidelberg, for example.
All of us? You as well?
No, that won't be possible just yet, I'm afraid. I must stay and complete my work here. You see, at the moment, your mother is finding it. She just feels right now you need to spend some time elsewhere. Would you like that?
Gretel nods and Bruno shakes his head. Father taps cigarette ash into a glass ashtray and sits back down.
I'm afraid, Bruno, in life, we often have to do things we don't want to do. The important thing is your mother does not feel that this is an appropriate place for you to be spending your childhood, and the more I think about it, the more I realise she's very probably right.
But, Dad...
No.
Their father, looking tired and sweaty, looks pointedly at Bruno across the desk.
It's time for you to move away.
He takes a drag on his cigarette, and Bruno lowers his eyes. Outside the camp fence, Bruno sits cross-legged, watching Schmuel lean the wheelbarrow against the pile of large concrete posts lying on their sides. The boy in the striped pyjamas slumps down on the posts, hanging his shaved head sadly.
Is everything all right?
Schmuel shakes his head.
We can't find Papa. He went on a different work duty with some of the men, and they haven't come back.
He looks concerned and preoccupied.
I've got some bad news too. I'm going away.
How long for this time?
That's why it's bad. It's forever, I think. Mum says this is no place for children. She's just stupid.
When do you go?
Tomorrow, after lunch.
So, I won't ever see you again.
Yes, you will. You can come on holiday to Berlin if you like, when everybody's getting on with each other again.
Schmuel is now sitting facing Bruno on the other side of the fence.
I wish I could have helped you find your dad. I really want to make up for letting you down like I did. That would have done it, wouldn't it? Helping you find your dad. It would have been great, like a secret mission.
Bruno digs at the ground with his stick.
I can dig under.
What with that?
No, but I could break something.
You don't want to come over here.
He pushes the stick deeper. Schmuel watches Bruno churning up the earth below the barbed wire.
I can come through to your side.
What's the point in that? Your dad's not going to be over here, is he? But I'd stick out though, wouldn't I? If I came through. But I don't look like you.
You could look like me though. If you dressed like me and shaved your hair off.
I'm not shaving my hair off.
You could cover it. With a cap.
My pyjamas are a different colour.
I can bring some. There's a hut full of them. Thousands of them.
Would you do it, though?
I want to do it.
Would you dare do it, though?
I want to help you find your dad.
I've got to go.
Tomorrow, then. I'll bring an extra big sandwich. And don't forget the pyjamas.
Schmuel scuttles off, pushing the wheelbarrow in front of him. After dark, Bruno is lying on his side in bed, his eyes wide open. In one of the cramped camp huts, Schmuel is also lying awake in bed. Outside, a guard is patrolling the main gate of the camp. Next morning, an unmarked car is waiting outside the front door of the house. In the kitchen, Bruno is laying slices of ham and cheese inside a large piece of French bread. He looks around for something to put it in, then stuffs it down the back of his shorts. Peeping carefully out through the kitchen door, he walks through the dining room and into the hallway, covering the bulky sandwich with his blue tank top. He makes for the front door as a soldier comes downstairs carrying two suitcases. Mother walks behind him.
Bruno?
Mum? Can I go and play on the swing?
Bruno...
It's my last chance.
Go on, then.
He sidesteps out, making sure she can't see his back. Smartly dressed, she walks through into another room. Bruno runs through the woods carrying a spade. He races along the sun-dappled woodland pathway beside the pond, brandishing the spade like a spear. He comes to the camp fence and plonks the tip of the spade into the ground as Shmuel runs over.
I thought you weren't coming.
I'm sorry. It wasn't easy to get away. I'm not meant to be out here today.
You forgot the pyjamas.
He's wearing two pairs.
Did you bring the sandwich? Would I let you down?
Bruno feels his back.
Oh.
The sandwich is gone. Shmuel shakes his head as if it doesn't matter and starts taking off one of the camp uniform shirts he's wearing. Bruno also starts to undress. Shmuel passes the shirt through the wire, then takes off one of his pairs of camp trousers. Bruno pulls off his clean white shirt and pulls on the dirty, faded, striped camp shirt, which has a number patch on the left breast. Shmuel passes him the trousers, then nervously glances behind him. Bruno, wearing the stripy camp shirt and trousers, pulls on a blue and white cap, carefully tucking his thick, dark hair inside so no one can see.
How do I look?
Shmuel nods. Dark, heavy clouds gather overhead.
Right, let's get going.
Shmuel keeps lookout as Bruno starts to dig. In the house, Mother picks up her handbag and glances out of the window. She stops, then peers out into the front yard. The swing is still and there's no sign of Bruno.
Bruno?
At the fence.
That's enough.
Bruno has dug a small trench under the barbed wire. He lies on his stomach and crawls underneath the fence into the camp. He stands up and Shmuel giggles at him in his dusty camp uniform. Bruno laughs too and brushes some of the dirt off his shirt.
Let's go and find your dad.
They run off past the stack of concrete posts and pile of rubble.
Come on!
Master Bruno!
In the house, Maria goes upstairs. Mother opens a door and looks into a gloomy sitting room. Maria pops her head through a couple of open doorways on the landing. In the camp, Shmuel and Bruno, both in their stripy uniforms, hurry alongside some large, tatty wooden huts. They pass sick, tired-looking men who are also wearing the uniforms. Bruno looks increasingly wary as Shmuel leads the way towards another fence with more men and boys standing behind it.
Shmuel, can we go to the cafe or something?
Cafe?
Shmuel frowns as Bruno looks behind him.
Maybe I should go home.
But what about Papa?
Bruno looks around at the huts and the other inmates and considers what to do. He nods at Shmuel, who smiles gratefully.
We'll check our hut first.
At the house, Gretel looks under a bed.
Bruno?
In the camp, Bruno stops to look at the stepping stones that smiling young girls were hopping over in the film his father was showing.
Come on.
He stares at the stones, then follows Shmuel into a hut. The large, dank, gloomy hut is crammed with inmates sitting on narrow wooden bunk beds. The boys walk between the beds.
What's happening? I don't know. We've got a march or something.
The inmates are ordered off their beds by capos, prisoners who work for the guards. Shmuel and Bruno are bundled out of the hut along with the rest of the prisoners. Outside, camp guards hold Alsatians on leads. At the house.
He must still be outside somewhere, Ma.
Mother runs through the dining room to the hallway. Out in the front yard, they talk to the guard outside the gate. Then Mother notices that the wooden door leading to the back garden is open. She runs alongside the garden wall with Maria and Gretel behind her.
Bruno!
Mother looks into the concrete shed.
Bruno?
She comes out and looks at Gretel, who's staring at the doorway of the shed. She follows Gretel's gaze and sees the sandwich Bruno made lying on the floor. Looking up, she sees the shed window that looks out towards the camp, open. In the camp, capos lead about 100 prisoners through a set of open gates. Bruno and Shmuel are among them. One of the sick prisoners collapses, and the others just step over him. The fallen man is shot. In his office, Father and some other officers are discussing a building blueprint labelled Crematorium 4.
Which means that our weekly capabilities would be almost trebled. So therefore, by the end of the summer...
Ralph.
Elsa, I'm in a meeting.
Bruno's missing.
Father supervises as the officers clear clutter away from a door in the garden wall.
Come on!
They grab a thick wooden pole and smash the door open. A guard arrives with an Alsatian. Father races through the door. Mother and Gretel pause for a moment, then run after him. Lightning flashes over the camp. Shmuel and Bruno are stuck in the middle of the marching crowd and are bumped and jostled by the men around them. The rain pours down and their striped uniforms are soon drenched. Capos keep the prisoners bunched up together and march them across the muddy ground. Father and the other officers sprint through the woods. Mother and Gretel also run through the rain-soaked woodland. Bruno, Shmuel, and the rest of the prisoners are sent down a concrete staircase. The inmates are herded into a dark changing room lit by dim lamps. Bruno and Shmuel sit down on a bench.
It's all right. I think we're just waiting in here until the rain stops.
Bombs off!
The prisoners, looking anxious, start taking off their camp uniforms. Shmuel and Bruno get undressed too. One of the inmates talks to some other men.
No, it's just a shower.
A shower?
It's just a shower.
Bruno, looking puzzled, strips off along with the rest of them. At the camp fence,
Herr Commandant!
The guard with the Alsatian has found Bruno's clothes lying in a heap beside the fence. Father and the other officers emerge out of the woods and look down at the clothes. Then Father strides around the fence and breaks into a run, followed by the other men. Shmuel, Bruno, and the rest of the naked inmates are herded into a cramped shower room by a couple of capos. A heavy iron door is closed behind them and locked. As Father races round the camp fence to the main gates, Mother and Gretel are stumbling through the woods. Guards open the gates and Father and the other officers stride in. Father barks orders and guards disperse across the camp. Mother and Gretel run out of the woods and stare down at Bruno's clothes, lying behind his little trench, which is now filled with rainwater. In the shower room, Bruno and Shmuel are dwarfed by the adult inmates who are squashed shoulder to shoulder. The two friends hold hands. The shower room is plunged into darkness. A hatch opens in the roof and a guard wearing a helmet and gas mask peers down at them. He pours a canister of tiny pellets through the hatch, then closes it again and there is blackness. The heavy iron door remains locked. Father charges across the camp and looks into a hut. He notices another hut and runs over to it. He stares into the gloomy hut through the open doorway. It's deserted. All the bunks empty. He runs back the way he came. The shower block is silent, the iron door firmly locked. On the roof, the guard in the gas mask carefully places two poison canisters into a wooden box and closes it. The general runs towards the building.
Bruno!
Outside the fence, Mother hears her husband's cry. She drops to her knees and sobs as she clutches Bruno's sodden clothes. father stands in the middle of the camp, breathing heavily, the rain pouring down onto him. Bruno's mother collapses forward onto the mud and Gretel gently lays her hands on her back. Oblivious to the rain, father stares at the shower block, his mouth open, a look of numb shock etched across his face. Slowly, he lowers his head, broken. The door to the shower room remains shut. Lining the gloomy changing room leading to the locked door, dozens of striped camp uniforms hang on pegs and lie on benches. Shabby boots clutter the floor. Bare bulbs in the ceiling shine down on the silent, ghostly room. The picture slowly fades to black. IMS audio description written by Daniel Coonan and Alan Blyton and read by Alan Blyton. Cast in order of appearance: Bruno, Asa Butterfield; Leon, Zach Mattoon O'Brien; Martin, Domonkos Nemeth; Carl, Henry Kingsmill; Mother, Vera Farmiga; Maria, Cara Horgan; Berlin Cook, Zusa Hall; Gretel, Amber Beattie; Lars, Laszlo Aron; Father, David Thewlis; Grandpa, Richard Johnson; Grandma, Sheila Hancock; Palm Court Singer, Charlie Baker; Meinberg, Ivan Verebeli; Schultz, Bella Festbaum; Heinz, Attila Egyed; Lieutenant Kotler, Rupert Friend; Pavel, David Heyman; Herr List, Jim Norton; Schmuel, Jack Scanlon; Isaac, Laszlo Nadasi; Capo 1, Laszlo Quitt; Capo 2, Mihaly Sapados; Capo 3, Sonderkommando, Zolt Safar Kovacs; Elderly Jewish Man, Gabor Hase. Hungarian Production Services, Eurofilm Studio, KFT. Peter Miskolci and Gabor Varadi. First Assistant Director, Martin Harrison. Production Manager, Georgi Kuntner. Financial Controller, Betty Williams. Location Manager, Andras Toth. Sound Mixer, John Casali. Supervising Art Director, Rod McLean. Post-Production Supervisor, Tanya Blunden. Makeup and Hair Designer, Mares Langan. Production Coordinators, Samantha Black, Susa Varadi. Music Editor, Dick Bernstein. Music Editor Temp Score, Nigel Stone. Music recorded and mixed by Simon Rhodes. Music Scoring Supervisor, Jim Henriksen. Piano, James Horner. Music Preparation, Bob Bornstein. Music recorded at Eastwood Scoring Stage, Warner Brothers Studios, Burbank, California. Rhythm for You, written by Eddie Christiani, Franz Popti, courtesy of APM Music. Smile When You Say Goodbye, written by Harry Parr Davis. Ich liebe das Leben, written by Matthias Seufert, courtesy of APM Music. Horst Fiesel Lied, written by Horst Fiesel, melody adapted from Hessian Marching Song, performed by Kapelle der SS Standard 4, courtesy of the Tomahawk Films World War II German Archive, UK. Romantic Violin, written by Hans Konselmann, Del Hench, courtesy of APM Music. Mein Regiment, Mein Heimatland, adapted from Traditional Soldier's Song, performed by Singschar der Kratschutz & Company, der Aufklärungs ABT3, courtesy of the Tomahawk Films World War II German Archive, UK. Stomping at the Ritz, written by Alan Morehouse, courtesy of APM Music. Orchids and Roses, written by Joyce Cochran, courtesy of APM Music. With special thanks to Joy Harvey and Laura Herman, Tim Corrie, David Nachimson, Budapesti Kosla Kadesi Valalat ZRT. Karolyi Istvan Gyerm Ekos Pont FOT. Copyright Miramax Film Corporation, all rights reserved. This motion picture was created by Miramax Film Corporation for purposes of copyright law in the United Kingdom. Filmed on location in Budapest and at Marfilm Studios, Lloyd Studios, Hungary. BBC Films. Miramax Films.